Welcome to Soroka Speaks, coaching minds and elevating careers. We're so happy to have you here. We hope that you enjoy this episode and that it supports you to put your potential in motion.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Soroka Speaks. I am one of your hosts, Emily Haruko, and I am joined today by my beautiful co-host, and she is going to introduce our very special guest.
Hi, everyone. It's Claire, and we are joined by the most incredible guest today. I am beyond excited. We have AJ Sarcione, who has been known and quoted as the king of positivity. So AJ, welcome to our podcast, Soroka Speaks. We are so proud and honored to have you join us.
Well, I'm thankful to be here. I'm also thankful that someone quoted me as that because it's helped bring in work in my life where people reach out and they're like, hey, we think we'd like to have you come in and speak. We heard you're the king of positivity. I'm like, yeah, someone said it. How much money you want to pay me?
I love it. Right off the bat, I have a question. I'm going rogue already.
Yeah.
Being deemed the king of positivity, what is your perspective or distinction between positivity and toxic positivity?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general terms, there is an honesty in how we show up in the world. And when we talk about authenticity, which is another word that I think is as big as positivity right now and being how it's used, there's a lot of people who walk into the world thinking they're being authentic, but they're actually showing up for what they believe they're supposed to show up as, which is the opposite of it. And I find that to be with positivity and toxic positivity. Like, I am a very positive person. I will always try to seek the positive inside of a situation. I was raised that way. I was conditioned that way as a child, and I'm so lucky to have that. And throughout my career and the work I've done being trained in heart math, it just keeps reinforcing the desire to find the positive renewing emotion, to find appreciation, find care, find that big important word of gratitude inside of things. But I also am not afraid to be honest when things are tough or when things are failures, because that's truly where you grow from. And when you get stuck inside of those moments and you do either one of two things, one, you get stuck in the negative depleting emotion and you live in the fear and the anxiety of something like that, it becomes very depleting. And obviously a lot of times more negative things start to happen in your life. Or two, you create a falsehood around what is actually occurring and you go to such a pretend that you're not even acknowledging what the real problem is. So there is no growth because you just make pretend that it actually isn't real in a toxic positivity type of way. And so we'll probably talk today a little bit about more on authenticity because of my program with Authentic Authority. And it's interesting that you started off with that question because that is a reason why I created Authentic Authority, you know, and the similar distinction between positivity, toxic positivity, like true authenticity, and then maybe this fake thing that people show up with to try to be something they're actually not.
Thank you so much. I guess we should tell our audience a little bit about, you know, who you are before we continue on in that capacity.
Absolutely. Well, I wrote some of these down. I did a ton of research about you, AJ, and I almost couldn't fit it on the page because the list of accomplishments and programs that you have designed, incredible companies that you have worked for, is immense. So I'm going to just list a few that I want to highlight and bring up and let the listeners know about you, but please do throw in, there's loads that we can talk about. I'm not sure, we might have it's so much content and things to talk about, there's enough for two podcasts. So some of your biggest highlights: you're the former head of Mojo and employee experience at Verizon and the head of internal brand and marketing at Yahoo. And I believe, remind me, was it Verizon that got bought by Yahoo or the other way around?
Yahoo was acquired by Verizon, and they essentially combined Yahoo with AOL. Verizon had previously bought AOL, and they combined the two really long-term competitors into one company. So you needed a head of Mojo that could help people understand what that looked like and how to feel safe inside of what is ultimately a pretty fearful type of situation to be in.
Yeah, Absolutely. And I think sometimes that's the part that can be overlooked in those mergers and acquisitions, right? It's, you know, letting everybody know that they're safe, let, you know, dealing with the emotions and the anxiety and the unrest and am I stable? Am I not? And then it breeds, I suppose, a little bit of competition. Well, I need to outperform you because I need to keep my job. And, you know, you might muscle in if we're doing the same role at the same, you know, between the two companies. Did you experience, I mean, I'm sure there was a whole array of kind of feedback and situations that you had to deal with in that merger as well?
Yeah, so what was really special about that role was personally, I had a dream to speak around the world and it gave me an opportunity to do that. And I traveled to more than 13 countries and spoke with all of our employees. And that's a really, you know, first of all, it's something, it was a dream that I had. I've had a couple big dreams in my life and it was one of them and it was incredible to achieve that. But it also was really special to be able to be in market in all of these different places and really feel in my heart, in my fingers, in my presence, the uniqueness of culture when it comes to outside of work, just the way we live and what that means for a company and the way that we orchestrate a company that's being led out of essentially New York City and San Francisco, and what that implication of that is in India or in Israel or in the UK or in Taiwan and how it reaches people. So that was really special for me. With employees, absolutely. In the US, Yahoo, so when Verizon acquired Yahoo, they had already had AOL. And they were going to bring Yahoo and AOL together to maximize how we could reach all of the users of Verizon with our brands and with our content. And in the US, I mean, AOL is not really a big brand. It hasn't been for a while. Like, it was huge, but it isn't. And Yahoo, still one of the top, I believe, five entry points to the internet, but that's for oftentimes an older generation. And a lot of people are leveraging the platform because they have a Yahoo email address that they're using for whatever, you know, list that they're subscribed to, or they're in finance and they're using Yahoo Finance, or they were doing it for fantasy football. So the brand still was significant, but not nearly as much as places like Tel Aviv, where you still had active Yahoo as a brand, active AOL as a brand, or, you know, in other countries around the world. And so when you then bring these two competitor brands together in those markets, it's scary for people, as you're saying. And I think in any M&A situation, and you probably both can understand this just from what I know about you all and the leadership work you do and the likely the communication skills you have, there's something special when you're in a role like mine that you can speak with the C-suite and understand the high level vision that they're delivering, and then be also able to speak with employees on the ground and hear the way that they communicate about their understanding of what matters at work, the way you're talking about, like, am I going to lose my job, right? And when you have sometimes emotionally intelligent CEOs, they can do a good job of translating big executive level vision into a place that it's consumable for people that literally have to get work done in order for the business to survive. But that's not, that first of all, is not oftentimes all capable of all CEOs. Like, a lot of them don't have those skill sets, and hence why they hire me to help them build them. But the other thing is they just don't have many times the ability to go be with people. And Emily, I see you at times raise your hands and you put them close to your heart. And I know that that's a reflection of your sincerity and spending time with people. And there's this beautiful genuineness of intimacy in there that allows you to have connection with people, which is very important, especially in M&A, when you have the fear of these companies, to be able to go and sit with people and make sure people feel seen and feel heard and feel loved. And then when you hear issues, they're actually then going to also hear response back, and that someone will initiate that and make sure that it's taken care of. And that was what my role and my team was ultimately there for. And I would say it is extremely significant. I mean, it helped to pinpoint good things that had been developed before the M&A. And there's a big backstory there on the challenges with that due to the nature of those businesses. But it also really exposed the areas of opportunity. And I was able to bring in some pretty powerful outside agencies to help reshape a lot of the concerns that I was finding to mitigate what ultimately is probably the demise of most M&As and them not working, which is bad culture. And so, yeah, I do think that what you described, there was that, but I'm happy that, you know, I was in a role that served it well, but then also personally, professionally strengthen not only the hopes and dreams I had for myself, but the ways that I've been then since able to deliver that to other businesses since I left.
I love that. And is that where you created the Shine Scout? Did that come in around the same time period? And if so, could you kind of explain to us what is this quiz? Personality quiz. I'm sorry, the Shine Scale that you created.
Yeah, that's cool. And in a way is a personality quiz. When I left my job to go start this business, I wrote digital notes to hundreds of people that I had met that were on my team or that I interacted with or that I felt I had built a connection with. And it was these little like teal colored digital note cards that had a picture of me on the side. And then, you know, using a digital pad, I was able to handwrite each person something. And at the end of it, I said to each one of them to keep shining because I really at that moment felt like we all have this ability to show up in the world and to be a light, our true sense of what that is for ourselves. Like that's very different. Like my light tends to be very bold and loud. And, you know, oftentimes like my energy can be very infectious to people. And then they'll also, as you get to know me, I have an ability to know when to pull all that back to meet people where they're at in a good way, right? Other people are much more sensitive in their light, right? There's beauty in that. They're listeners. They're people that really want to consume. And I just think that when we understand ourselves and we show up as our true selves, we shine. And so I said that to everyone. As I went off into my own business and started to think, how do I take all this stuff I've learned and implement it? I built the Shine Scale, which is essentially 14 characteristics that I've determined I've seen in great leaders show up. And I wanted to create something that would help me evaluate that in people to have a starting point. Just to pause for a second, a lot of people that I have somewhat of an aversion sometimes when people are like, you're a coach, not because I don't think coaches are amazing. They're incredible. I think coaches from business coaches all the way to coaches of sports, like we need people to coach people. There's plenty of words we can call them, mentors, all kinds of things. But there's something that's happening in the world where there's people that show up in the world that are coaches and they don't have the skill set to do it. They went through some 2-hour training and got a certificate to be a coach, and they've never even had the experience to understand what it means to have that ability to influence someone's life. And so when I went out on this journey, as much as I thought at one point I'd go to get a psychology degree. And I was told by some psychologists that I had brought into Verizon to not waste my time. They're like, your experience is far beyond what you're going to learn academically. And that's what matters. And I thought about that from the coach standpoint. I was like, well, I've done so much. I've worked with already so many CEOs throughout my career, and I've been around the world. I'm just going to create my own materials that I think are going to generate the outcomes that allow me to do my work well. And so I created the Shine Scale, these 14 characteristics, to help me evaluate someone and understand where there was opportunity for them to have growth. One example is like a CEO that I worked with wanted to drive innovation inside of a company that they had recently been brought in to lead. And so I was there to work for them and work with them on being successful in this role. And I had them take the Shine Scale. With the insight of knowing that they wanted to drive innovation, I already understand there's certain areas that need to be elevated to get an organization to be excited to innovate. So they take the quiz, and the two areas where they scored the lowest on in my quiz was passion and creativity. And I said to them, if you want people to be innovative in this company and you're not emulating two critical areas that can drive that, there's a big miss here. And so then I went and had a conversation with them around what was inside of their passion, what lit them up, what were they passionate about in their past that they maybe kind of lost. And they talked to me about riding a bike and how they used to be a cyclist and how much fun they had when they would get out on the bike because, oddly enough, it started to allow them to think and ideate and ultimately be more creative. And I was like, well, look at this. We're solving two different things. Something you love that also is going to allow you to be more creative. Do you still have the bike? And they said, yeah, I still have the bike. And they had not been on it in quite some time. I said, can you get on the bike and ride the bike? And they said, I can get on the bike and ride the bike. I said, great. I want you to get on that bike and I want you to ride it to the office. One day, start with one day. And when you get to the office, I want you to wheel the bike into the office, wheel it through the halls and bring it into your office, which was full glass walls. And I want you to put the bike next to the glass walls. They said, okay. And I said, what's going to happen is one person's going to notice that the bike is there. And they're going to ask you, why is the bike in your office? And then you're going to light up when you tell them, I used to cycle. And then I met this guy and he said, you know, you got to get on the bike. And then I got on the bike and I rode it here. And when I was riding here, I thought about these three things that we need to be doing. And I was like, do you understand the impact that that could change and that could make inside of that one person? And then when you spark that one person, how that one person's probably going to go out and tell someone, you know, our crazy CEO rode their bike here. But listen, it was a great idea because then it got them to think of these three things. And then I was thinking because of that, maybe what if we did these other three things? And so on and so on. And the idea that one spark could lead to another spark that could lead to another spark that ultimately could create the innovation and the shine that they wanted. And so that's why I created that.
I love it too. And I want to highlight just a couple of things that you said. One is, you know, being a coach and one for the last 12 years and one that has done, you know, robust training and personal growth and invested an insane amount of money into myself to I think at least cultivate the opportunity for me to be able to be truly a transformational coach and provide the opportunities for others to experience transformation. We've done an entire podcast episode on this with Adam Quiney, is that this is the essence of deep transformational coaching is going through some form of a process, whether it's a formal training or otherwise, that allows you to go through your own journey to the dark side of the moon and back. And in that, you have an ability to take your clients as deep or as you have gone yourself. That is part of, I believe, a crucial component to what separates mediocre coaching from truly transformational coaching. So doubling down on that one, and tied to that, the thread of what you call, you know, what did you just refer to it as the ripple? Is that the word you use? Or
I mean, it could be, but that idea, one spark leads to another spark that leads to another. Yeah.
And I was hearing it as like the ripple effect of this work. And we actually had an internal conversation with our team this morning around this is why we do what we do, because we have no idea if somebody attends one of our webinars, maybe their camera's off. We might never know who they are. But they got something there and they took that to their partner and their partner took it to their team. And they're like, we will never understand truly the impact of what doing this work in this capacity at a truly transformational level will do. And I genuinely believe that this is what will continue to shape the course of humanity and move us toward a more optimal future. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I encourage you to look at heart math. I'm a practitioner of that. That is something that I have invested in becoming certified in, because at one point in my, as Claire was describing many things I've done in life, in my undergrad, when I originally was in a music program and left and was in the music industry for a second, I went back, I was a biochem major. And when I was a biochem major, I thrived in it because I love hard science. And when I started to have to take my soft science classes with psychology and philosophy and even religion, world religions, I was challenged in there because it wasn't so concrete. And what's kind of fascinating is now I live in that world, right? Significantly in the soft science world. But I leverage hard science to support me on it because it's very important for me to see the data or to see where the research can take something. Hence why I created a tool that allows me to not only qualitatively look at someone's shine scale and their skills inside of that and the characteristics, but to quantify it. And over time, see where, as humanity, all the people I work with, all the teams that have taken it, net out. But I think you should look at heart math, because there's, beyond the work we're talking about today, there's something about the relational energetics of our heart and the emotions that we have inside of it that create the ripple effect, the impact inside of others, that goes deep into the ways that leaders show up in workplaces and the way that they can enter into rooms and truly take an incoherent situation and turn it into a coherent situation based upon the power of coherence over incoherence. And the power that we have as a human, the 3 to 5 feet of energy that is around us. Frankly, you can feel my energy even in this capacity, I'm sure, as I see you. Yes, because we have that. We emulate energy. A lot of people think that it comes from the things that are inside of our mind. And so many people work in mindset, which is very important. The mind actually only gives off about an inch of energy. What you're actually feeling is what's in my heart. Mm-hmm. And so when we learn to leverage the power of the heart brain, it in itself has the ability to influence other people around us. And if someone's in a negative, depleting emotion that's driving them into incoherence, and we walk in with strong coherence and strong heart rate variability and the ability to shift ourselves at times from the anxiety when things happen to the gratitude that we're still present and we can take that and move forward with it and find something positive in it, what that does to other people. And so yes, yes to all the things that you're saying. And yeah, for me, I think as you talk about that transformation comes in different ways. I'll say one more thing and then I'll stop. I sometimes struggle when I go to conferences and I'm with other people and their entry point in why they're helping other people is a very personal thing that they have to go through. Some people, that's very true. The thing that they had to struggle through can create significant impact because they got past it in how they help other people. And I think those sometimes are very specific changes in your life that, yes, over time can translate into other ways that you can take it. Let me give you an example. If you have an eating disorder and you have to handle that eating disorder and find ways to overcome that, the ways that you could help other people that maybe are in that same situation, because it's very specific. Through that, you may then also develop better resilience skills or grit and other things that you could then teach teams beyond that very specific thing, right? Which then comes from experience or comes from deeper certification training that allows you to take your one thing and broaden it. But then there are other times people take that one thing and they're like, I had this moment in my life and then I like overcame it. And now here I am and I can completely change your company as a result. And you're like, how'd you go from that to this? You know, like, yeah. I love seeing how a story can build, but I'm like, wait, what have you ever changed a company? Have you ever influenced a CEO before? You know? And for me, in maybe a very privileged way of being brought up by two incredible parents that really, truly loved me so hard, but held me so accountable to being a good person, which I can even talk more on of science and that of the high standards, high support idea and why that matters with kids, that I at times don't have that story. I don't have that story of that moment. What I do have, though, throughout my career is even from my first job at 20th Century Fox when we were doing, oddly, another M&A, seeing the fear inside of people, seeing the challenge inside of bringing two companies together, seeing what that did to people. And me, because of my lucky upbringing of these lovable parents of mine who put everything on the table to make my life amazing, I was like, wait, why are y'all spinning like this? This is an opportunity. Let's take it and make it the best. And you know, throughout those experiences, as you talk about, those transformational experiences, I think is what's made me credible to be able to go and do it in companies like Clif Bar or companies like Heinz or entertainment brands in LA. So yes, I love the stuff that you just brought up.
I really now want to train in this hot math because Emily and I are massive about energy. And like you brought up, she's always very much like this on her heart. It's one of the things that I love about her so much because you can feel it through the screen, right? And it's just like, you know, no matter what, it's almost like she's got you. You know, she feels you and yeah, that's one of Emily's, one of many incredible qualities that she has. But
I just want to say that now I'm going to be super self-conscious every time I feel I want to go to my heart. I even stalked myself like twice already. I was like, they're just going to think you're putting it on now. I'm just kidding. I will allow myself.
Like inside of that, right? Like obviously, right? That's us just, so real quickly, if I can. Because I love what you just did, okay? There's a difference between judging and judgment, okay? When we live in judgment, that's a negative, depleting emotion. And what you just did is judgment of yourself. Don't do that. There's no need. Don't worry about that. I love that you use judging to say, am I doing it because it's real? And what I think we just heard Claire say is, it is. Mm-hmm. And so then turn that into the love. There you go. Do it as much as you want to do it. And if someone has judgment against that, that's their shit. And your power of continuing to live inside of your truth just will influence them over time. It might take a second for them to feel the power of that and say, you know what, I need to put my hands to my heart right now, you know?
We all need to put our hand on our heart more, right. I think. Like, yes. Get into that heart-centered space.
I mean, it even goes to the science around hugging. Like, there's science around hugging and the power of that. And like, I don't even realize it, but everyone, it's so awesome when I do pay attention, when people go, AJ, you give the best hugs. I love that, like, real embrace of another person and sharing that kind of energy with people. And I tend to hug, like, longer than most people think they're supposed to. But what's funny is then they're like squeezing me harder and they're like, you give the best hugs, right? We need to hug ourselves, right? And that to me is what you're doing in those moments, right? Yeah.
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 Isn't there something? Do you guys remember that there was a song in my childhood? Maybe it was a Canadian thing, but it was 8 hugs a day. That's the minimum. 8 hugs a day. Not the maximum. 8 hugs a day. Or maybe it was 4 hugs. I don't remember. Insert whatever number you like. I'm sure there's some research around it. But that one's always stuck with me. And sometimes I think about, like, being a single mom. I'm a single mom. I got 2 kids, AJ. Like, sometimes the only hugs I get are, you know, from my kids. And I was having a conversation with David Gerard, the magician, the other day. And we were talking about, like, some days there's no hugs. We are not meant to live like this, right? No. Like, physical touch, platonic or otherwise, is incredibly important, I believe, you know, for our nervous system regulation, for our co-regulation as a society, as the collective.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about HeartMath?
The boilerplate
impacted you and how, you know, you see it, like, working in the world.
Well, what's interesting is I was brought in to help a company with their leadership offsite, and we needed to find some keynote opportunity. And it was they were growing, and, you know, throughout growth, all the growing pains of what happens and private equity and all the things that make these leadership offsites be awesome but a challenge. And I thought, you know, we could just bring in someone to talk, but what if we brought in something that actually someone could take some real critical steps around, and back to when you were talking about rippling, that maybe if they learned something in the room, there was a real effective way for them to go and create impact right away after. And I had been working with this psychologist on her brand and building that. And she had started talking to me about HeartMath, and she had not yet been certified in it, but she had all these modalities, and it was another modality she was looking to get into. And I said, what about that? And then she introduced me to her peer that had introduced it to her. And then next thing I know, I had them hired, and they came in and did a session. And it was a co-CEO situation, and neither one of which I think was really on board at first. And then after the fact, they thought that was one of the best things that had happened throughout this multi-day leadership offsite, probably because it was something they needed to hear most. And what HeartMath ultimately is it's a modality to help us build resilience. And when you're going through any type of transformation, change, business, life, that is a critical thing that we all need. And when you start to recognize that the emotional power of the heart and the heart brain and what it does to our body is so significant, you also can learn quickly our ability to shape it and to leverage it. For anyone that wears an Apple Watch or some type of device like that, they are oftentimes will be familiar with heart rate variability. And those devices measure that. And that's what HeartMath uses as its tool to evaluate the effectiveness of the modality to influence a better heart rate variability. Because what they've determined is, in years past, HeartMath's been around for like 30 some odd years, and it's extensively researched and science backed. But cardiologists used to just look at the pattern of the heart and understand the rhythm of the beats of the heart. Well, over time, they started to realize it's not just about that. It's actually the space in between and what's happening. And that's what heart rate variability is. And when you look at that, you can find if you're in like negative depleting emotions, fear, anxiety, overwhelm, that fight or flight type of stuff, you can have like a very incoherent heart rate variability graph because your body's like fighting how to create the movement forward, the resilience inside of whatever it's you're going through. And if you think about that and feel the rigor and feel the rigidness of like these very harsh lines, you can almost start to feel the way that would deplete your energy. Like, it's just over time going to make you exhausted, right? On the opposite side of that is coherence, which is this beautiful, like, symmetric line. And it's a wave that just feels really still and peaceful inside of itself, right? That's where we're in positive, renewing emotion, where we find gratitude, where we find appreciation, where we find care. And when we're in moments that can cause us to be frustrated or angry, and we have the awareness around that, if, say, a boss comes to you and says something that is triggering to you, and our amygdala naturally will go to a past experience to respond against the fear around what that created previously. When you have the level of awareness around that, and you can use the tools to, instead of going to the negative depleting emotion, be like, wow, I'm so thankful I was able to get through it one other time that I'm gonna get through it again. I'm so appreciative that my boss is acknowledging something that I can work together with them to fix. You change, you reframe what it is. And you use the power of the heart to actually shape the way that the brain is responding. And what's interesting is there's more information that comes from the heart to the brain than the brain to the heart. And so there's true power inside of the heart brain that is so much more powerful than what our brain can do. And when we get stuck in the idea that, you know, no, my brain, it's the way I think. And like, I got to think better. I got to think differently the next time. That doesn't know how to work. They've proven it does not work. You can't tell yourself the next time I face this thing, I'm going to do X. You won't do it. Your brain doesn't work that way. Through the conditioning of a lot of people with mindset, it's actually in the emotion and the heart that allows your brain to change the way that it's going to affect how it's going to create a response the next time around. And so, you know, there's so many different ways to go about this type of work. Heart math is just one of the modalities that I love. And when I got aligned with it, one of the senior people there said, you know, we see tons of awesome people, but you show up and it's like, you already are heart math. And I was like, well, that's cool. You know, I guess that makes this that much more exciting and easy, but I've become so much stronger as a result of it, even if that's true that they said that. Like, I live by it. There's very simple things that you can go online actually and look it up and learn how to do quick coherence. It's a free tool that they offer that I encourage everyone to do. But, you know, in the morning, especially when I feel like I'm going through a period of struggle in my life, I'll even more intentionally do my heart focused breathing and do my quick coherence before I start the day, just to allow my baseline for what I'm about to face that day to be elevated, you know, so my response can be better. And essentially, that's what heart math is. It's pretty complex, as you can probably take, but
yeah,
it's worth looking at.
I love that. And as I'm listening to you talk about it, I can see how, you know, I know you referenced obviously in the workplace, because that is where you take your learnings and your experience and all of the training and everything. But you then also referenced to yourself and how you just do the practice every morning, you know, to set that baseline. And I was thinking about that just in terms of, you know, me personally and the things that I have been through in my life, and thinking about, you know, had I have had that training 7 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, how the way that my body functioned with stress and trauma and things like that came out in a physical way. And I've spoken about this on other podcasts, and I spoke about this last week. It's come out in burnout. It's come out in psoriasis, in arthritis, you know, because my body just can't process and my brain can't process what is going on. It doesn't know how to handle trauma and stress and emotion and everything. And I think even, you know, you tell me if I'm wrong, but even just listening to the way you describe it, I can see how powerful it is in business for sure. But just from a human personal perspective, what can the benefits of just being able to overcome so many things and regulate, like you say, what is going on in your heart brain and your head brain, and how to kind of get back in control rather than that being, in, you know, your head being the one that's in control of things.
Correct. Yeah. Like, what, as you're talking about this and some of the like medical things that you were just describing, or the way that your body is showing you stress, right? When you're in negative depleting emotion, when you're in that fight or flight side, and you don't have the level of awareness, and you're constantly living in anxiety and fear, and you're in negative depletion, it is releasing cortisol, which, first of all, like, makes our tummies big, which I don't think anyone in the world would be like, I want that. I mean, I'd rather eat cookies than have a big tummy, than have it come from, you know, me being angry about stuff. But it's literally taking years off your life. And then when you look at the other side, when you're in positive renewing emotion, when you're able to find gratitude, even in the shittiest situations, and I think this goes back to the first question you asked around positivity and toxic positivity. When you find the true opportunity and gratitude, even in the worst of situations, and you're very honest about that, but you're able to really find something to be grateful for, it releases DHEA into our body. And DHEA essentially is a vitality hormone that like ultimately is a sexy hormone. Like it makes you feel like, woo, hey, you know, come over here. And like, who doesn't want to have that? And it actually extends life. And so at the bare minimum, like if you don't get anything else out of this whole concept right now, the one thing that I do think most people are able to feel, do I want my life to be shorter or do I want my life to be longer? Now, listen, some people be like, I've had enough of this shit. I'm done, right? Like, let me live my best years and I'm out. But when you talk to like executives who work so hard to be successful because maybe their legacy or whatever their thing is, but a lot of them also to provide for their family or to leave something behind for their kids, right? Or to get to retirement and be able to go enjoy their boat or whatever it is that they want to do. And you tell them, great, that's awesome. You're going to get there. Clearly, you're on the right trajectory. But if you don't manage this emotion wisely, what's going to happen when you get to that point and you only have a year or two left because you've literally depleted your body and the time that you can live on this earth? Or could we start right now and create more years for you to be able to go sailing around the world on your yacht that you worked your whole life to create and watch your kids get, you know, have their grandkids and all this stuff? That's a moment where people are like, yeah, like I want that time. And so when you even just go down to that and you think about it, it's pretty powerful to say, I could have control over, you know, obviously anything can happen, final destination here, but anything can happen. But if you can have more control over that, the amount of time that you have to enjoy how hard you've worked to get there by just managing your emotions better and managing your heart and the power of your heart, to me, it seems like a no-brainer. Yeah, I want to figure out how to do some of that. And then the implication of it is exactly what we're talking about, ripple effect and impact and the way that it transcends across other things. So if that's just the one little spark of a starting point, that's enough. It's going to turn into being a better leader, influencing better leaders, creating better teams, all that cool stuff that it can do.
You know, my brother-in-law is essentially a relationship coach, a men's work guide, but just a truly brilliant man. And I had the privilege of support facilitating an event that he was leading a few weeks ago, of which we also did a podcast episode on, but I digress there. You know, he said something what I thought was so true and hit me to my core. He said, our biggest addiction, at least, you know, in the Western world or in society, our biggest addiction is not our phones. It's not screen time. It's not the attention economy. It's the addiction we have to being in our thinking mind and how we are prone to figure things out up here and how much living, how this is the addiction. This is the default. I mean, for some people, you know, clearly. We're in the presence of some very evolved people in this podcast episode. But right. But in general, it's like the largest addiction I think that we have is living from the neck up. And even we teach the three centered check-in, which is a Buddhist practice that comes from, you know, the mind, the heart and the body or the gut. Right. And when we were in utero, the brain and the intestines were the same thing until the spine developed. And guess what's in between the brain and the gut? Mm-hmm. The heart. So this is tracking very, very well, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And yes, and one tool that I give to people a lot is the three R's, because it's easy to get stuck in the swirl. Awareness is so important, first of all. Let me just say that. When you work on your awareness, and I have this other method, or the method that I truly stand behind the most, called the imagination method. And essentially, there's four awarenesses in it. And I call them that specifically because I think when we can be more aware, that's a great starting point for us to create change, create transformation, to move ourselves oftentimes in the moment from being in the swirl to being present and allowing us inside of that presence to move forward. And so I have this thing called the three R's. When you live in a state of awareness and you recognize I'm in that thinking brain, like I'm in my swirl, I'm in the, I can't do this, I'm not good at this, I won't succeed. Judgment. Judgment is the number one driver of negative depleting emotion. When you look at HeartMath and you look at what they study, judgment is the number one driver of negative depleting emotion, okay? So when you're in those states of judgment and you have the awareness, I say to people, you need to recognize R1, remove R2, and redirect R3. And at first, it's very practical, like you have to be very specific about it. Recognize, remove, and redirect. You have to have the awareness to say, I'm in that space, I'm in a space of judgment. And ultimately, what you want to do is redirect yourself to a positive renewing emotion to be able to move forward. What do you think the number one driver of a positive renewing emotion is?
2.
Boom. And honestly, the fact that you know that is so significant because when you ask most people, gratitude is not the thing that they get.
I've been doing a lot of work on that for the last 8 years, trying to find that silver lining, extract the, you know, the gold from the shit. I've also just done a little bit of research in this realm. So perhaps, you know, but it also came to me because I know that it's true.
Absolutely. And it's amazing that you did that because it's true. So if you can move from judgment to gratitude with those 3 R's, that's a really powerful tool to just even tomorrow start to use. In order to get there, you have to have awareness. And I really believe in awareness. That's why I put it into my method. That's, you know, at the end of the day, when you're, I'm sure you all know this too, when you create systems, part of the creation of that is not only the science that goes into it and the application of it and testing it and making sure it works, there's branding around it, right? You have to be thoughtful about why you use words to call certain things, you know, what they are. And you have to have certain reasons why you call something and brand something. So people remember it, but then people also have a connection to it. They understand. And as I, throughout these last like 7 years or so, as I grew my business and I leveraged that tool that I had ultimately created, you know, throughout my career, that method, it came to me that it wasn't just like, you know, step one, step two, they really were awarenesses. I needed people to be aware of what these things are. So do you want me to tell you what they are?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the method that I use called the imagination method, and the reason why it's called the imagination method is because research shows that by the age of about 35, there's only 30% of people using vivid imagination. And so if you sit and you think about that, you think of like, if you're a CEO of an organization and you have, you know, 10 employees that are 35 years old, there's only 3 of them that are using some kind of bigger imagination to think outside the box, to think beyond what's actually happening, which is really important, especially if you're trying to grow and create and build something new and not just be stuck in the day-to-day remedial things that we have to do, but push the boundary, right? And curiosity, essentially another connection to imagination, is so significant now more than ever in today's day because of AI. AI is going to do all the black and white for us. It is the tool that can accomplish everything. And everyone's so fearful it's going to take their job over. Well, guess whose job it is going to take over? The people who live in the fear that it's going to take over the job, because they're going to be stuck in not imagining how to use this incredible tool to their advantage to make themselves be even better at what they do, right? And that's why I called it the imagination method, because regardless of AI, we need to inspire people to dream and think differently and think boldly and imagine and have curiosity. But in the world of AI, especially where it's going to head very quickly, a person's human abilities to be able to resonate in a way that allows them to not live in the fear of what that tool is going to do, but to be able to be in the gray of developing the tool further, or being able to leverage the tool in creative ways, or being able to find synergies with other people to make more magic happen in the world as a result of having this amazing technology. And so one of the first real drivers of why I built the tool is that when you work with a lot of senior executives, say you have a culture issue, maybe morale feels like it's down, people are a little like water cooler angry, they're like, we need an event to like bring more energy here. So go throw an event, go throw a party, right? I'm just going to say real first for everyone out there. Anyone that says like cakes and balloons don't matter and like they're the worst thing for culture, like one, you're wrong. And two, if you've never actually done that and used it, like stop saying that, because it's just like you just want people to hear like something that you makes you sound cool. Cakes and balloons actually are an effective tool with culture when they're used correctly. Anything can be really effective when it's used correctly. And so I created this because when they go throw a party, like some people are like, okay, and they go throw a party. I'm like, why? Why do you want to throw a party? What is it that we're trying to achieve here? Like, what is it that we want to get out of this? And so I go back to the first part of clarity and understanding, like, what are the values that you want to create? What is the vision that you want to create? The vision not being, oh, I want like a party with the balloons and the food trucks and the da da da. That's a picture. I want a vision that's in feeling. What do you want people to feel? What do you want them to walk away feeling? Because for what it's worth, it may end up being that party that's your picture, or it may be something completely different that we is in essence is still a party, but it could come up in a completely different way. Then you move into, once you're in clarity and you do that well, you move into influence. And inside of influence is where you recognize that in order to influence people, it starts with your intention. You have to understand what is it you're trying to do. And once you understand like what are the intentions that you're trying to create, you then make sure you reinforce it with an action. And that's where you actually can start to build some influence. So say you want to implement, you know, this new thing. In order for it to be successful, you probably should get some people in the company who have voices that people want to listen to be a participant in the creation of it, to say, how should we develop this? This is what we want to achieve. This is why we're doing it. How could we do this? And you have them join in the creation of it, because then they're going to become ambassadors, right? Then you move into codify, which is where the thing actually occurs, which is where the CEO or whoever was like, throw a party. And it's in that moment where you actually create an experience that has the ability to shift perspective. Because when you shift people's perspective, that's when you have the opportunity to shape the perception that you want them to have. And so it could be a party, but there's probably going to be something very specific or intentional inside of the way that that party shows up with cakes and balloons. Maybe that cake is a certain design that when you cut into it inside, it reveals something that is very significant to the brand. It becomes so magical that it automatically starts to excite the imagination of people, right? It starts to make them feel differently. It starts to make them think differently. It starts to make them see differently. The last part of the method is extremely important. And that's when you're in perseverance. That's where the resilience comes to play. That's where once you do the thing, what are you going to do afterwards to make it sticky? Another example real quickly would be like happy hours. Oh, let's throw a happy hour because that makes people happy, right? True. I actually think like people are pretty happy when they go to the happy hour and there's free drinks and some hors d'oeuvres being passed around. But then they leave and very quickly, all that happiness and energy just goes out the door when they receive the text or the email from their boss on the mistake that they made or the thing that they have to get done by, you know, 9 p.m. that day. So you have to then take the happy hour and think, how do I turn that into a campaign? How do I take stories from that? How do I take content from that? How do I take something that will extend it over maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe 6 months from now when we said something at the happy hour that we were committed to and we come back and we reaffirm, remember that happy hour we had? Well, here's us delivering it. And that's where these moments, these cakes and balloons that people love to say don't work, actually do work when you're strategic with them. And that's why I made that tool. And what's interesting about the tool is I've integrated that tool into the way that I develop leaders by building their brands. Back to my whole qualm around coaches, it's the same with like personal brand. So many people in the world like, oh, I'm going to build your personal brand. But what are they going to do? They're going to help you have a LinkedIn line and they're going to give you something for your Instagram bio and they're going to like do what? No, those things are good. We need those. Those are tactics. But what is the strategy? What is the brand building behind that? How are you reaching people? How are you actually influencing people? How do you show up in communication? That will then help us to shape those things that you're actually going to do so they show up in your true authenticity, hence my authentic authority name for the way that I go about leadership development, and they're real to you, but then also that you build upon it and you keep yourself accountable because you've done the work to say, these are the values that do matter to me. These are the ways, these are the things of how I want to show up in the world, et cetera, et cetera. And that whole system of leadership development is built around clarity, influence, codify, perseverance as well. Because in the end, I can do all the amazing brand work for people. Up until very recently, it was one-on-one and it's expensive because my time's money. But like, I can do all that work for people, but if you don't take it and apply it, what is the point? Are you just going to walk around with like a billboard on you being like, oh, I'm so-and-so? No, you have to do the work. You have to apply it. You have to show up and hold yourself accountable to it. And guess what? It's going to change and it's going to shape as you grow. Otherwise, you're not growing. Your manifesto that we create, that thing should change over time because you're growing when you keep using this work. So, I think building these structures and building stuff for people is cool, but like you got to take it and you got to work it. Emily, you've spoken about that already. Like the fact that you came out with gratitude, you said it's because you've done the work. You keep doing the work. You keep showing up. That's why you were able to throw that out the minute I asked. And I'm telling you, people don't do that. It's because you do the work. So back with hands on your heart right there because you deserve it.
Brother. I have noticed that Claire and I are over here taking copious amounts of notes, and I hope our listeners are too. I am so grateful for you sharing your wisdom and your time and your essence, your heart and your soul with us. This is truly a phenomenal conversation. Thank you,
Adrian. Yeah, I appreciate that you invited me here, and Claire, that, you know, throughout your journeys around the world and us talking, I felt like Claire was somewhere magical. I can't remember if it was Greece or something. And I was
I was in Cyprus. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like living vicariously through you. So I appreciate you taking me on that journey as we got this call scheduled. And I just thank you both for giving me an opportunity to join you. And I'm a big believer in you put things into the world, they happen. I heard you all were recently in Vegas and you had a very successful event there. So maybe the future will bring us together to do some work together, which could be really cool.
I got a couple ideas already kicking, in addition to a community that I may want to invite you into as well. We'll save that for another time. But yeah, truly feeling like the divine intervention for the universe allowing our paths to cross. And I'm very excited to see where this will continue to go.
Likewise. Well, thank you both so much. I really appreciate it. If anyone wants to find me, you can find me on LinkedIn, AJ Sarcioni. That's probably the best way. I am on Instagram. I'm private. Sometimes I pull that back and you can see into my fabulous life of friends that take me around the world on their fancy yachts and invite me to their fancy homes and stuff. I'm very lucky. My partner and I constantly talk about how lucky we are to have such wonderful, gracious friends. And sometimes I remind him that, you know, as lucky as we are, they're as lucky to have us in their lives too, because, you know, we show up in the world to be good people. So if you want to follow me there, you can. And if I have to admit you in and I don't, you send me a message and you can be real forward with me and say, I heard you on the podcast, let me in. And I will. So
I love that. Thank you, AJ. And I would also recommend that people come visit your website because there is so much more juicy information about you on the professional side, not just, you know, the yachts and you know, flying around the world. But there's so much from the professional standpoint. And I know that we're out of time and we really didn't talk about your Authentical Authority program. And I really, you know, think there's so much that we can talk about that we could keep going all night. But I would definitely love to point people to your website so they can check that out as well, because I think we can touch on it really quickly that it's the program that you created. It was initially designed for one-on-ones and now you've rolled that out into a group program as well. If you want to touch on that, please do.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, it's kind of what I'm talking about, and that was one-on-one. And I started a group cohort earlier this summer at the end of the spring, and it was very successful. You know, I'm really a believer in testing things and making sure they work. And the people that went through it felt like it worked really well for them. And so I have it open for other people to apply when I'm ready to do another one. You know, I want to make sure that I have the time to be able to do that effectively and with care for people. You know, there's also something in my heart that thinks at one point I'll try to teach other people in the world what this material is, because ripple effect, you know, truly to create impact, as much as I love being the person that gets to facilitate it, I know that there are other magical people in the world that can take something that I'm really thankful I was able to develop and leverage it with the people that are in their world. So who knows, that might be the next thing that I show up with on the website. So everyone can keep their, if they want, they can keep looking. And if you're interested in that, just send me an email. And if enough people tell me they're interested in it, then I'll just do it. So
I love that. Well, thank you once again. Honestly, so much of what you said resonated with me. I can already see how I can have some takeaways. I'm sure all of our listeners can. I know Emily just mentioned she's writing loads of notes as well, but we are truly grateful. I know you've been incredibly busy and you are incredibly busy. So we really appreciate your time to come on and speak with Emily and I, and for the listeners as well. There's so much information that everyone is taking away. Yeah. Feel incredibly lucky and blessed to have you and to have met you. So thank you again.
Thank you both. I hope you both have a great evening and day. And I look forward to this continuing however that is. So thanks again.
Me as well. Thank you so much for gracing us with your wisdom and your beautiful, bright presence. Very, very grateful and humbled and honored that you would take some time with us today, AJ. I hope all of you listeners have also enjoyed this episode and also taken copious notes or reminded yourself to re-listen. Stay tuned. I am sure we will be bringing AJ back at some point. So thank you all so much for joining us. We will see you next time.